WMAL News at 7. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. King Charles III officially announced as Britain's monarch this morning during an ascension ceremony at London's St. James Palace.
I, Charles III, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of my other realms and territories, King, Defender of the Faith, do faithfully promise and swear that I shall inviolably maintain and preserve the settlement of the true Protestant religion.
This was the first time an accession ceremony was broadcast live. Starting today, all the Blue and Yellow Line metro stations south of Reagan National are closed so the new Potomac Yard station can be connected to the system. That station's midway between the Reagan National and Braddock Road stations. Spokesperson Christy Benson says those stations won't reopen until October 23rd. Until then,
there are many routes that they can take. We have express. We have buses that stop at each station along the route.
Also today, the entire Yellow Line shuts down until May of next year, so the Yellow Line bridge and tunnel between the Pentagon and L'Enfant Plaza stations can be fixed. After 5 years of construction, the western stretch of the I-66 express lanes opens this weekend. You'll be able to ride them in the 9-mile stretch between Route 29 in Gainesville and Route 28 in Centerville. VDOT's Michelle Holland says they'll hopefully relieve congestion.
By providing new additional access, managed lanes through the dynamic tolling to allow more predictable travel times similar to our other express lanes in the region.
If you use the new express lanes, you'll have to pay a toll that will vary based on how much traffic there is. For now, you can take the express lanes for free if you have at least one passenger. Former President Trump's legal team and the Justice Department submit nominees for special master to review documents removed from the Mar-a-Lago raid last month.
Last month, the FBI seized more than 11,000 documents. This does include 100 classified government records. Earlier this week, a judge granted Trump's request for a special master, a third-party attorney who can independently review those documents.
Fox's Ashley Strohmeyer reporting. A retired United Airlines flight attendant commemorating 9/11 in a unique way.
Last year, I pushed an airline beverage cart from Boston's Logan Airport to Ground Zero, New York.
This year, retired United Airlines flight attendant Paul Venito is pushing a 55-pound drink cart to the Pentagon from Dulles Airport, walking along the route that Flight 77 took before it crashed into the Pentagon on 9/11. He's honoring fellow flight attendants killed that day.
Being a flight attendant myself, of course, it bothered me when I would hear about, you know, the passengers fought back.
He said they did, but flight attendants led that effort.
They didn't get credit for a lot of stuff that they did.
Maria Leaf on WMAL and WMAL.com.
WMAL Sports, Hyattsville native Francis Tiafo defeated by Carlos Alcaraz last night in a semifinal match of the U.S. Open. The Nats fell to the Phillies 5-3. Traffic and weather next on Newstalk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, on 95 northbound between U.S. 17 Warrington Road and the Centerport Parkway, there's a disabled vehicle in the right lane, so do use extra caution there. Earlier accident eastbound on 66 in the Markham area now cleared away. You will find long-term construction westbound between Business 234 and the Prince William Parkway, and that is blocking the left lane. Also, the ramp from Route 50 east to westbound 66 is closed this weekend until 5 a.m. Monday morning for a traffic shift and permanent ramp opening. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow into the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
Right now, 63 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. It's Hour 2. John Gizzi is with us, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. He is also our resident historian. And, John, the passing of Queen Elizabeth II this week. As you have had a couple of days to reflect, and I know you have followed her very closely over the years, what strikes you as the legacy that she will leave?
Essentially, her her legacy will be that of someone who took the crown when it was grounded in its ancient traditions in Britain and made it relevant and even loved by the modern world. She saw change as an agent with which the crown could work and flourish, and guess what? It did. It wasn't that long ago that the Republican movement in the British public, that is, those who would abolish the monarchy and choose an elected president who would be able to dismiss Parliament, was going strong. It certainly grew even stronger after the death of the Queen's former daughter-in-law, the beloved Princess Diana. Few who saw it could ever forget Princess Diana's brother, Charles Spencer, eulogizing her in 1997 and looking directly at the Queen and her husband and children and saying that the crown had to modernize or that it faced its final days. Well, guess what? Charles Spencer is forgotten. Princess Di is still remembered warmly. And the Queen, well, she just went on and on. People loved her. Children adored her. And the interest that she had at virtually any public ceremony was one of a monarch who not only liked what her people were doing, but loved them personally. When she died, the palace in Scotland, Holyrood Palace, her official residence, was flooded with flowers and visitors. And the ancient ceremony, triggered by the code name "London Bridge is Down," began. The royal website was edged in black, as was that of every government ministry and the BBC. The anthem, "God Save the Queen," was played over and over again on radio, television, and the net, and it will now become "God Save the King." And, of course, everyone is coming forward to deliver reminiscences and tributes to the person who was her nation's mum. Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister, in his first speech from the back benches in Parliament, gave a widely paced tribute to the lady he called, and Britons are increasingly calling, Elizabeth the Great.
John, the Queen has been seen as such the gracious lady and the leader, the ideal existence, the ideal world. But she's dealt with scandals, and we're familiar with some of them recently with Prince Andrew and Prince Harry, but these aren't the only things she's ever had to deal with during her reign.
Oh, yes. And one has to remember her beloved uncle, Edward VIII, who had abdicated and thus put her father in the position of becoming king, a move that shortened his life, was something that weighed very strongly on the young princess and later queen. There was always talk of Edward VIII returning to Britain and somehow assuming a role in public life. As much as she may have loved him, she just knew that the king who abdicated to marry an American divorcee would only cause scandal by reappearing on the scene. In later years, there were always rumors that her handsome husband, Prince Philip of Greece and Denmark, may have wandered a little bit during their marriage. At one point, she ordered him back from a trip overseas when the rumors were growing too strong about the prince and his personal secretary and Navy buddy enjoying themselves too much. All those rumors disappeared after that. Governments were blackened by scandals, notably the Profumo scandal that brought down the government of Prime Minister Harold Macmillan. The Queen was above it all. For the most part, scandals that involved her family in later years are what caused considerable angst for the monarch. But in the process, her subjects seemed to understand that the divorces of three out of her four children, plus the exploits of grandson Harry and his wife Meghan, were not the Queen's fault. neither was the most recent scandal involving her second son, Prince Andrew, now the subject of an international sex scandal and someone who's been relieved of all of his royal duties. She towered above all of this, and her subjects not only understood her plight, they stood by her, and she was loved even more.
I was watching a documentary, and it was just fascinating to think that she took the role of queen at the age of 25 when Harry Truman was in office.
Yes, and she had already met President Truman when she was the princess. She actually knew every president from Truman to Biden and had meetings with all of them. Never did get to meet with Lyndon Johnson for some reason, but she knew them all, and the ritual of a president sitting down at Buckingham Palace is something Americans and the British people are used to. One thing, several biographers say her favorite president of all was Ronald Reagan, because they both loved to ride horses.
Prince Charles, now King Charles III, help us understand the power dynamic that you might expect. You have in Great Britain, of course, the new Prime Minister, Liz Truss, just in office this past week, and now you have a change in the monarchy. What is the power dynamic there?
Well, for one thing, Liz Truss is the fourth Prime Minister in 6 years. A lot of people are losing faith in their elected leaders and in number 10 Downing Street, the home of the Prime Minister. And now there is a new king. Charles has been the subject of attention in his country and around the world since he was born 73 years ago. He's the oldest person to ascend to the throne, the first divorced monarch since Henry VIII, the first king who ever had a college degree or flew an airplane, and he is someone that his subjects know. He became Prince of Wales and touched the nation's heart by speaking the Welsh language. He had many girlfriends and finally married a Princess Diana. Their divorce and her death, no doubt, blackened his reputation in the eyes of his countrymen. But now in later years, it seems as though the public are giving Charles another chance to come to the monarchy. He follows a phenomenally loved monarch, his beloved mother. When he went to shake hands going into Buckingham Palace, large crowds cheered him on and chanted, "God save the king." And then yesterday, when he addressed the nation and the Commonwealth and spoke of the future and things that would happen, he announced that his popular son and daughter-in-law, William and Kate, would become Prince and Princess of Wales, and his more controversial son, Harry, and his wife, Meghan, he spoke of with love as they pursued their new endeavors overseas. Overall, it was a warm address and one which touched the hearts of all countrymen. The Queen is dead. Long live the King.
So he is King Charles III. We saw him at Buckingham Palace on Friday. But tell us what the situation is with the coronation.
Well, not even the date has been set, Rick, for the coronation and all the pomp and circumstances, his becoming the head of the Church of England in a ceremony presided over by the Archbishop of Canterbury, that is down the line. And by the way, Britain has not seen anything like this since his own mother's coronation 70 years ago. However, in between, everything has been choreographed and planned for decades. As soon as the Queen was officially pronounced dead, a word went out throughout the country, London Bridge is down. That meant that town criers would soon go out and announce the new king, it also meant that there would be the royal website blackened with an announcement of the Queen's death, that all other government ministries and the BBC would have their websites edged in black, and that Charles would take the oath as king almost immediately from the Ascension Council. From there, it is a period of mourning culminating in the Queen's funeral a week from now, and a long series of meetings that the Prime Minister will have with his ministers and other leaders of the Church of England. Already, he has sat down and received Prime Minister Liz Truss. We might call this a transition period for U.S. politics. For the British, it's a generational process.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, thank you so much.
Rick, always a pleasure, and indeed, these are exciting times.
It is 7:20. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Cheryl Atkinson coming up next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
I'm slow going traffic right now on 395 northbound between the Pentagon and the 14th Street Bridge. On 95 northbound between Warrington Road and the Centerport Parkway, disabled vehicle in the right lane. Earlier incidents on westbound 66 in Markham at Virginia 688 has been cleared from the roadway. There is a ramp closure on 66 from Route 50 eastbound to westbound 66. Will be closed until 5 a.m. Monday morning for a traffic shift and permanent ramp opening. Follow the posted detours. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Storm What's Up forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures a little bit cooler into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight. Could be heavy at times into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
64 degrees, 7:21 in the nation's capital on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler, and it is great to be joined once again for Season 8 of Full Measure by the host, Cheryl Atkinson. Of course, she is an Emmy Award-winning investigative journalist, best-selling New York Times author. Cheryl, good morning. Great to have you back.
Good morning. It's great to be here.
Well, I know you spend much of the summer traveling around the country, traveling around the world for that matter, setting up stories, researching stories for the new season. And one of the most impactful and important stories that does not get the coverage in the mainstream media outlets is the crisis at the border. We see it on the Fox News Channel. We hear about it when we're listening to talk radio, but you just don't see it on the nightly newscasts.
Well, it's funny because when I went to the town that is now ground zero for this crisis, the record illegal immigration, which is Eagle Pass, Texas, the woman at the hotel where we were staying remarked that we're about the only media that's come to town. I mean, they can't even believe it, that they know this is one of the biggest stories in the world and, you know, the most illegal immigration in all-time American history. And yet, like you said, Fox News is there reporting, and we ran into a Japanese crew. But it's like much of the mainstream media is ignoring it as if it's not happening. And that tells you the manipulated nature of the news today, because by any neutral standard, this is a huge story. And what I saw when I was there just kind of blew me away, even though I knew from some reporting that I dug into and from the stats that it was going to be bad, but it really was.
We've seen the mayors of New York, Chicago, and Washington basically melting down over a few busloads of illegal immigrants, but you were there. What kind of numbers do you see every day in Texas and in Arizona, New Mexico?
Well, you can understand how laughable that the local officials in these border towns think that is, to hear these sanctuary cities complain about literally a drop in the bucket. So let's look at Eagle Pass, Texas. They are seeing as many as 2,000 illegal border crossings a day that they know of, plus an estimated 2,000 a day that get away. So if you work out those numbers, as I did, Eagle Pass, not a very big town, about 28,000 people, has the same number of people crossing illegally every week as the entire town's population. You can imagine the resources this has sapped up, what it's done to the community. And the local officials, you'll hear from them on Sunday, they're primarily Democrats and Hispanics, and they just let the Biden administration have it. They can't believe that they hear them say in Washington that there's no crisis, that this is Trump's mess that they're cleaning up, and they're literally begging for them to come down, someone from the administration, and help and see what's going on there.
I want to turn to school safety. Obviously, a big concern as kids are going back to school this fall. And there are some things in terms of technology and security advances that are working. And you look at one tomorrow.
Well, yeah, this is interesting because I think there are a lot of techniques being tried and strategies being discussed. But Scott Thuman found a group of former special ops guys who saw a need and worked for quite a while on some high-tech solutions that might help with some of these school shootings and the concerns over it. And apparently they've come up with some technology that will identify a gun in someone's hand on school campus prior to the shooting begins. They had some research that said in many instances, these gunmen walk around for some minutes holding the gun prior to actually shooting. And if you could, they figure, identify and alert authorities, even if you can buy yourself just 1 minute, 2 minutes, it could make a huge difference. I mean, obviously the response time then would have to be very quick to do something, but they actually think they've cracked that nut. And they've got some schools already using this technology. Scott Thuman is going to tell us about it and show us in his story on Sunday.
Well, we've seen inflation over the past 7 or 8 months, and one way I measure it is my cranberry almond cereal that is a favorite is now up to $6.39 for a box, and it's not even the family size. I think we all have our ways of measuring how inflation in the economy is hitting us individually. You have a rather unique way that Full Measure is looking at it tomorrow.
Well, I do, but before that, you made me think about I buy this inexpensive chicken that I bought for a long time because I cook some of it for my dog because I have too much time on my hands. And this chicken has been for years $1.99 a pound at the grocery store. This is some kind of like white meat breast chicken. It's now $3.99. Well, you know, that may not seem like all that much more, but when you add it up, a couple of dollars more, what is that? It's over a 200% increase, 300% increase. And I worry about and think about families on budgets that are seeing that across many products. Well, what we're looking at Sunday is something called the haircut economy, because apparently there is some rational reason to look at the price of a haircut when you're looking at what's happening to the economy in terms of how prices are going at the local salon. And Lisa Fletcher is going to dig into this for us, but she found that indeed some places that have boasted of being able to keep the cost of a basic haircut the same for over a decade, sometimes a couple of decades, they finally had to increase their prices. And she's getting responses from them as to what customers are saying after all these years and how this is a pretty good measure of what's going on with the health of the economy.
Well, between taxes and inflation, I think we're all getting a haircut these days. So, Cheryl Atkinson, the host of Full Measure. It is tomorrow morning, ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And we encourage you to check out Cheryl's blog at CherylAtkinson.com. And you can take a look at some of the stories that will be coming up on Season 8 of Full Measure. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Talk to you next week.
Looking forward to it. 728, Saturday morning update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer coming up and K.T. McFarland with a look at the reign of Queen Elizabeth II.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. It's official. King Charles III announced as king at an accession ceremony at London's St. James Palace this morning.
In taking up these responsibilities, I shall strive to follow the inspiring example I have been set in upholding constitutional government and to seek the peace, harmony, and prosperity of the peoples of these islands and of the Commonwealth realms and territories throughout the world.
Charles automatically became king when his mother died on Thursday, but the accession ceremony is a key constitutional and ceremonial step in introducing the new monarch to the country. Big changes on Metro today. The entire Yellow Line is shutting down, so the Yellow Line bridge and tunnel between the Pentagon and L'Enfant Plaza stations can be fixed. Spokesperson Christy Benson.
That will go all the way through May 2023. All other stations will be open, but there won't be any Yellow Line service. So those stations will be served by the Blue and Green lines.
Also today, all stations south of Reagan National shut down through October 22nd, so work can be done to connect the new Potomac Yard station to the system. A Temple Hills resident arrested on multiple charges after police say he purposely knocked out power along the Green Line yesterday afternoon. Edward Walker's alleged actions shut down service between Navy Yard and Branch Avenue for a time yesterday. Walker's charged with interference with a railroad, malicious destruction of property, and trespassing. WMAL Sports, Carlos Alcaraz ends Hyattsville native Francis Tiafoe's run at the U.S. Open yesterday by beating him in the semifinal match. The Nats fell to the Phillies 5-3. Traffic and weather next on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Traffic and weather on News Talk 105.9 WMAL. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Still going traffic on 395 northbound between 110 and the 14th Street Bridge, and in the express lanes northbound between Boundary Town and the 14th Street Bridge. Left lane is reported to be closed due to an event taking place. Northbound on 95 between US 17 Warrenton Road and the Centerport Parkway, a disabled vehicle has been cleared from the roadway. Just watch out for brief delays. In the district, an accident being reported on southbound DC 295 at Benning Road. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow into the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in Washington. I'm Heather Curtis on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, also the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, the focus obviously this week has been on the passing of Queen Elizabeth II in the UK, but that's not the only change in leadership in the United Kingdom this week. Liz Truss, the new Prime Minister, Conservative Party. So we have a new prime minister. We now have a new king in England. And what do you see, if any, impact at all on the U.S.-UK security relationship and our defense relationship?
Yeah, it should be very little. I mean, the basic philosophy of those leaders, I don't think, differ much at all from their predecessors. I mean, Queen Elizabeth was always very strong. Obviously, you know, we've had a very enduring strategic relationship with the British. I think the Prime Minister will continue to support the activities. I think as some of the audience who follows me knows, right after Brexit, I went over and spoke at Warwick University about what the path should be for our two countries post-Brexit, which was, in my judgment, a reinvestment in NATO, which is kind of what's happened over the past few years. So, especially with the current focus on Ukraine, I think the two militaries will continue to work. The British military is really small, and the one thing that may be changed a little bit, which I think would be a bad move, but doesn't mean it won't do it, is Prince Charles is a really big greenie. He really does believe in this whole global conspiracy that there's a crisis going on. So he may try to push the British military even more into being green, which I think would just further hobble them. But, you know, that's the only change I would see, kind of what would come from Prince Charles. I'm sorry, now I should say King Charles at this point.
I want to turn to Ukraine. A headline this morning from Reuters. Ukraine troops reach railway hub as breakthrough threatens to turn into rout. Sounds like Ukrainian troops are making some progress. They've been on the offense. And what do you see as the future here for Russia's front lines?
I would ask people to just take a step back. There's some maps out there that show where this is going on. So Ukraine is a very big nation. Russia has control of about two-tenths of the nation. And these gains, while they look great in the media and they're taking back these towns, isn't going to add up to a complete rout of the Russians. So these are tactical victories. And so I always try to, like, give people kind of the reality that, they got the Russians off guard. They've made some gains. But just take a step back. You know, you could Google it right now if you're following along in the audience. And you can actually look at the map and look at how much terrain Russia still has and what this really means. These are like little nips around the edge of what Russia has. So I've argued before, Rick, that Ukraine simply does not have the combat power, that is to say the combination of armor and manpower, that would be required to really push the heavy Russian forces back out. So is this good? Yeah, I think this is going to help the morale of the Ukrainians, going to hurt the Russians. But again, the Russians have immense combat power that they haven't even brought to bear. So I think it's a temporary thing. I think we'll be talking in about 3 weeks that it's going to be reversed and the Russians are going to come back on the offensive.
Are you getting any sense from people you talk to at the Pentagon and around town about the U.S. resolve to support Ukraine? Tony Blinken making a surprise unannounced visit to Kyiv this week. I'm not sure that yeah. accomplished much, but what about in general the resolve of the U.S. to continue to support Ukraine?
Well, I found it interesting that Blinken shows up, the cheerleader. That should have been Austin. I mean, think about this for a second. Blinken, and I've read over what he did during his visit and what he said. Rick, Blinken's job is Secretary of State. He's the guy supposed to be going out there trying to figure out if there's a diplomatic solution, not being the guy cheering on the offensive. So there's just something wrong. This is the first time in my memory that we've not been at the forefront of trying to negotiate an end of the conflict. Because if you read what he did, it had nothing to do with ending it. It had all to do with encouraging the Ukrainians and letting them know that we're on their side. So just saying, that's just kind of not what I would think a secretary, it's not what, if I were president, that's not what my Secretary of State would be doing. That would be what the Secretary of Defense is doing. So that's a bit odd. The other thing, and we all know this is the dirty secret, all that money, Rick, that they're talking about going to Ukraine, it ain't going to Ukraine. It's going to all the defense firms here in Washington. I mean, half the people who are listening to us right now are probably going to be, their organizations are going to be getting some of that money because they're using it to produce defense items to go to Ukraine. So this is one of those situations where, you know, everything the Biden administration says, you got to kind of take a really hard look. And the other thing that's still a mystery is why aren't we actually accounting for all of these billions of dollars that we're spending to support Ukraine? I've never seen such an amount of money being just given out without any regard to oversight. So sorry to be kind of the negative Nelly this morning, but I just don't see this as the great that everybody else seems to be thinking right now.
Well, you touched on something, and I was going to ask you this question. You sort of answered it, but I am interested in why isn't there apparently more negotiation going on to try and get a ceasefire or to bring this thing to some kind of a conclusion? I mean, periodically you'll see Russian and Ukrainian officials get together, and then it all seems to fall apart. Is there something going on behind the scenes, or is this just sort of a stalemate?
No, I think what's going on behind the scenes is that there is no interest within the United States to end the conflict. Remember, Rick, this is a great distraction from all the domestic issues we still face. And the defense industry, just saying, is not going to say no to getting paid a lot of money to make weapons. So, it's something that I think the American public should pay attention to. I still believe we have to be very cautious on how much we commit ourselves to a foreign conflict or any objectives that we would assign are very vague at this point. And again, I think we would all recognize that a peace between Russia and Ukraine would be the best thing, one that maybe would even result in the Russians being told to leave through diplomatic means. So, again, I just this administration has not done much right, and I don't see anything they're doing here to be correct as well. So it is what it is.
And one last question. There was a report of a potential arms purchase by Russia from North Korea. Significance of that?
So, well, North Korea is always in need of hard currency, always. They are the greatest mafia on the planet, for those who don't follow them. And the Russians need equipment. So one of the things that has been, I'm sure, easy to broker are, you know, we'll give you some cash or some, you know, some military hardware. And the North Koreans, remember, are essentially at a state of war with South Korea. That war has never ended. There's an armistice. There's no peace treaty between the two countries. So I don't find it all that extraordinary that you would see Russia, who needs, you know, kind of combat-ready stuff, going to countries that they're friends with to get it. Heck, I would even see the Chinese probably potentially producing some stuff for Russia eventually here, because Russia probably does not have the production capacity necessary to produce everything they need. So got a lot of manpower, but Russians really lagged in mobilizing their forces, which has been one of their greatest vulnerabilities since they started this.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, LondonCenter.org. As Tony, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you.
And we'll be talking to KT McFarland next, but first, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
An accident now being reported on eastbound 66, just east of Virginia 234. That is exit 44. That is currently affecting the right lane, so stay to your left and use caution. 395 northbound, that is slow between Boundary Channel Drive and the 14th Street Bridge. A work zone is reported on the 14th Street Bridge in the left lane, and in the HOV lanes northbound, the left lane is closed as well. Accident activity being reported on DC 295 southbound near Banning Road, but so far not seeing any delays in the area. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A few areas of fog will be likely through the morning hours, but they should burn off, giving way to mostly cloudy skies on this Saturday. High temperatures a little bit cooler into the lower 80s. As we head later on tonight, rain develops late, likely by 10, 11 o'clock tonight. Could be heavy at times into early Sunday morning. Sunday, we will have the chance for showers throughout the day. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 70s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the First Alert Weather Center.
63 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:47 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update. We're at 7:50. I'm Rick Fowler. KT McFarland joins us, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and the author of the bestseller, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, an honor to have you with us.
Honor and a pleasure for me too, Rick.
Thank you. And I want to mention, we don't always do this when we introduce you, because we could take 15 minutes to run through your resume, but you were a senior speechwriter to Secretary of Defense Caspar Weinberger in the Reagan administration, and at the time also you were a Pentagon spokesperson, and you drafted the Weinberger Doctrine speech regarding the Reagan administration policy on use of force, and the first draft of President Reagan's Star Wars speech. So during the Reagan administration, you were in the UK, you were in London, attended an opening of the Parliament. And tell us what that experience was like as we reflect on the life and times of Queen Elizabeth II.
Well, first of all, I've always had a love affair with Great Britain. I spent two glorious years at Oxford University, and then would often come back over the years. And I did go to the opening of Parliament at one of the openings during the Reagan administration. I was in the gallery, and I watched the Queen preside and read her address. I mean, I don't remember what she said. It wasn't one of those memorable years or memorable speeches. But I do remember how moved I was by the symbol of the crown. And, you know, you can't help in a gallery to look down, and there were the members of Parliament and the cabinet and the prime minister. You knew they would come and go. But the crown, embodied by the Queen, would endure. Now, the Queen, already at that point, she was long into her reign. But you knew that the crown, whatever came next, the crown would endure. And it would endure in several ways. It endured as the embodiment of the British people. So the Queen, as you looked at the Queen, she'd gone through wars, recessions, depressions, famine, pandemics. But the crown, and by the crown I mean the British people, endured. And I was also reminded this last week of the Queen's speech, her annual Christmas address to the British people and the Commonwealth, which she does every Christmas Day, and every Brit around the world, Scots even, and Welsh, and everyone listens to it. And she talked about the pandemic, and she said, we shall get through this. And watching her and coming from her, a woman who, remember, when she was a young teenager, Britain had been bombed and bombed and bombed during World War II to the point where it probably came 3 weeks if the United States hadn't entered the war, Britain would have probably had to surrender to Nazi Germany within another month. So she had endured. She knew what endurance meant. And for her to say, we'll get through it, yeah, you know, you all of a sudden thought, yeah, we will get through this. And obviously, like most Americans, you can't help but sort of not envy it, but admire the crown and the symbol that it is. But then you can't help but contrast it to America. You know, we've lost that. We've lost that sense of who we are. We're a people. We've been through tragedies, too. We've been through civil war, depression, recession, pandemic. Our forebears had to cross oceans during, often enduring unbearable hardship just to come to America. And today, our newest immigrants, legal or illegal, they're doing the same. We have suffered as a people, and we have endured. And it's worth remembering that in this current era of anger and bitterness and division and people screaming at each other that I'm entitled to this or you robbed me of that, that we, in fact, are better than that. Like the Queen is better than that. And, my personal story is that after I left the Trump administration, the Mueller investigation came after me pretty hard with the Russia hoax investigation. And after they were finished slapping me around, I left the country with my husband and kind of went to the mountaintop, as it were, flew over the Atlantic, went to Glasgow, rented a car, drove to the far west coast of Scotland, which is very rugged, and then got on a ferry boat and went for hours on the ferry boat to a remote Hebridean island where there were very few people and a lot of sheep and no Wi-Fi and no cell phone and no modern conveniences in that regard. And I thought about America because I was worried, you know, what had happened to my country. What had happened to me, what had happened to my country. And I realized that we're that way, too. We can endure. And that, in fact, what makes America great is different than what makes Britain great. And the crown makes Britain great. But what makes us great as a people is that we evolve. We change. We're constantly changing as a society, not just the demographics and the immigration and the way we make our living, but we're constantly evolving. And our governments never keep up with it. They can't. I mean, the nature of people in power is to want to stay in power, however they can do it, not to necessarily answer to the needs of their people. And so when we have our political revolutions every 40 years, which our founding fathers expected us to have, wanted us to have, thought we had the responsibility to have, that's how we reinvent ourselves. The crown does it differently. Britain, the crown endures even though Britain changes. When America changes, we need to sort of not have that crown endure. We need to have a new generation of leaders. And I'm just hoping, praying that before I die, I see a Ronald Reagan-like leader who comes forward and stops getting us angry with each other and can find a way to appeal to the better angels of our nature instead of stirring up the demons within us. I look across the panoply of American leaders today. I'm not sure I see that person. And I sure wish somewhere in America that person or a number of those people are stepping forward and can find a way to get elected without having to get us all at each other's throats, who can somehow unite us as a people. That's my dying wish for America, that we can have our version of that sense of purpose and community and renewal again.
Well, you know, as you talk, I think about it, and you look at this country, and as a people, we beneath the politicians and we beneath the media, I think we're pretty strong, and we can get along with each other, and we have our relationships at work and our friendships, and the craziness is up at the level of the media and the politicians, and we need that leadership, as you mentioned. And President Biden said he was going to be the unifier and has been anything but. But as you mentioned it, you know, we do need another Reagan or somebody like that that could unify us, as the Queen had unified the UK for 70 years.
Like we need leaders who will love us more than they love themselves, huh, and will love the concept of America more than their own personal power.
Wonderful words. K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. As always, K.T., thank you so much.
Pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Thank you. And that's it for the Saturday morning update. Garden Sense will follow the 8 o'clock news. Thank you for being with us this morning.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.